Well, thank you all for joining us for the Fats, Fuels, and Oil webinar for the week. Today I have Tori Alden with us. He's going to go over the veg oil section. If you have any questions, drop them in the Q&A and we'll answer them at the end of Tori's presentation. If you think of them during the presentation, go ahead and drop them in the Q&A there. Whenever you feel like it, we'll get to them. Tori, you want to take it from here and tell us what's going on in the veg oils world?
Sure. Thanks, George. So this week, or well, really for the past couple of weeks, soybean oil futures have remained pretty volatile, but prices have been kind of stuck around the 38-cent level. So we had a streak of 9 of 10 weeks where prices changed by a penny or more, and that ended 2 weeks ago with changes, weekly changes of less than 0.25% for each of those weeks. But if you look at the weekly ranges were still pretty wide. And there's a couple of reasons for that, really. One, it looks like soybean futures have probably topped out. Growing conditions in Brazil are getting better. And so I think the speculators are probably starting to leave soybean futures. And so that's pressured soybean oil a bit, just generally as soybean futures come down, soybean oil is a product of soybean is going to follow. But there still is this bullish world dynamic that sort of limits the rally. And in addition, the spread between palm oil and soybean oil remains historically low. And the fundamentals for palm oil are probably more bullish than they are for soybean oil. So it's difficult for soybean oil to really stretch to the downside, because it, on some level, further downside just incentivizes people to switch from palm oil to soybean oil, importing countries. So that kind of limits it. And so you've had this intra-weekly volatility, even as the prices haven't moved that much. Now, today, we're down pretty sharply, in part because, again, soybean futures have fallen. But it will be interesting to see if soybean futures continue to fall, how far soybean oil follows before the palm oil spread kind of limits its decline. So going forward, still we expect probably continued weakness in soybean futures, and we expect that to translate into soybean oil. I think before we had kind of talked about prices remaining well supported through the first quarter of 2021 when the seasonal decline in palm oil ends, but it looks like with the decline in soybean futures that we expect soybean oil probably is going to stretch that spread as far as it possibly can. And so that implies some potential weakness here in the short term. Coming up this week, we've got USDA's monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report. We are not really, the December report typically is not a report where USDA makes a bunch of big changes, and it's typically kind of a boring report because they're done with production forecast for soybeans. And that's, at this time, that's probably the most important number that gets published. Traders will turn their focus to South American production and any changes that USDA makes there. I think people probably expect USDA to cut production a little bit, but I think there's some potential that that they won't, just because it's still relatively early in the growing season down there. And while it while conditions were drier than normal during planting and during the very, very early part of the growing season, the outlook is improved pretty dramatically, especially over the last week. And it's too early to really say for certain that soybean yields are going to be either trend, above trend, or below trend. I think we've talked before about the idea that you can have soybean plants that don't look that great, and if they get water at the right time, they can still yield pretty well. So I think, again, the change in the outlook for the weather in South America probably weighs on soybean prices and weighs on soybean oil prices in the short term. So we probably don't expect any big changes from USDA, but let's just kind of look at where we're different from USDA and talk a little bit about that. So our biggest difference really is in our biofuels usage. And that really shows up in both the biodiesel production number, but also in the non-biodiesel production number, because for the USDA, non-biodiesel usage includes their forecast for renewable diesel and co-processing usage. And because we expect a pretty big increase in renewable diesel capacity in production this year, we have a fairly large difference in the non-biofuel usage forecast from USDA. You can see here that although the implied soybean oil usage from the EMTS data for October showed a pretty significant drop in soybean oil demand, we expect a pretty steady and pretty significant rise in soybean oil usage and renewable diesel production over the next 2 years. And that's reflected in our balance sheets, and that accounts for the bulk of the difference between USDA's 14.9 and our 15.4. I would suspect we're probably lower if you look at non-biofuel usage, and you can see that in the calendar year balance sheets. So non-biodiesel usage here is really non-biofuel usage. And you can see this is calendar year, so it doesn't compare exactly, but you can see that we're expecting rising prices and basis levels to ration demand, especially in this area. Now, one of the things that's been particularly impressive over the last couple of months has been the strength of this demand. It doesn't look like much rationing has occurred, despite the fact that basis levels have really shot up. And so this week we raised our forecast for non-biofuel demand by 750 million pounds. And we offset that increase with a decrease in our export forecast. We dropped this 350 million pounds only because there's not really any place else to cut it. And having a carryout that's significantly below 1.5 billion pounds at this point feels a little bit uncomfortable. This obviously will all sort itself out over the next 11 months, I guess. But I think that there is some chance that, again, given the spread between soybean oil and palm oil, that this export number is actually a little higher than we're projecting and maybe closer to USDA's 2.6. So I wouldn't expect them to follow us with the cut downward. We just didn't really have any other place to reduce demand. And so that's kind of why we're at that level. You can also see the difference in our forecast for soybean oil usage and biodiesel production relative to USDA. We're about 600 million pounds more or less above USDA's forecast. That is primarily driven by our assumption that you have low CI feedstocks going into renewable diesel sort of first, like that's their first choice so that they can take advantage of the LCFS credits in California. And even as the supply of those feedstocks comes back, we expect that increasing renewable diesel production will limit the supply that's available to biodiesel producers. And that means more soybean oil for biodiesel production. Even if biodiesel production doesn't go up at all this year, we think that probably the shift that we saw as part of the pandemic towards soybean oil, because the other supplies are the supplies of stuff like choice white grease and DCO were limited. Even as those supplies come back, we think that this increase in renewable diesel production probably mimics that. And that probably was a preview of what the market's going to look like going forward. So soybean oil as a percentage of total feedstocks probably remains relatively elevated compared with the historical trend in soybean oil usage. And so just kind of to circle it all back and summarize, we don't really expect any significant changes here in USDA's balance sheet. There are some areas that we are significantly different. We probably would make a couple of changes here if supplies were larger. But at this point, it's a little early in the season to understand and predict with a lot of confidence exactly how this is going to play out. So this is our shot at it right now, but I would expect that we will be changing these numbers as we move forward. I also want to talk a little bit about canola oil. So we get canola oil, will also, USDA will also make some forecasts for canola oil. They typically don't make big changes month to month in their canola, in their U.S. canola oil balance sheets. They put out a sort of an annual summary once a year, and that's where they make big changes. They make some minor changes. These changes that you saw from October were mostly kind of truing up with data that had already been released for the 1920 marketing year. So we expect that their numbers probably won't change at all for 2021. Here we're a little bit different in that our forecast for demand is lower in both biodiesel production and in non-biodiesel usage. These could be potentially a little bit higher. I think maybe some of one area where there's some potential is if our assumption about low CI feedstocks going into renewable diesel is correct, and soybean oil exports remain really, really strong because of the spread to palm oil, then maybe by the amount of canola oil that goes into biodiesel production is a little bit higher, and that's kind of where we get some relief on that, on the relatively tight soybean oil ending stocks. But right now, based partially on sort of the historical feedstock mix and in some assumptions that we've made, we're a little bit just 75 million pounds below where USDA is. We're also a little bit below them on non-biodiesel use. They have non-biodiesel use growing pretty sharply from last year to this year by 300 million pounds. We've got it a little bit, the growth a little bit lower than USDA at about 175 million pounds. Again, if the demand for feedstocks from biofuel producers is large like we expect it to be, then maybe the more of the non-biofuel usage for both soybean oil and canola will be met with canola. But because of the relative price difference between canola oil and soybean oil first and then everything else, it's kind of the last ditch effort for us to fill in our balance sheets. And so we tend to be a little bit more conservative on our growth forecast than USDA is right now. One of the reasons that we have smaller demand is because we have smaller supplies. That's partially due to the fact that our forecast for imports is just 4.1 billion pounds compared with 4.34 for USDA. Canada is crushing like mad, and this is a good way to transition into the Canada canola supply and demand balance sheet. Their crush over the last 10 weeks has been up about 3% from the same period last year. And in last year, they demolished the record for crush. We expect that to continue. But the reason that they're doing it is because, one, their demand, domestic demand is pretty robust, and the demand for exports is pretty robust. And we think that probably limits the amount of supply that's ultimately available for the United States to import. Now, this week we raised our forecast for canola crush in Canada to 10.25 million tons. That was a 250,000 ton increase from where we were before, just based on the early season strength in crush and COPA's latest monthly report, which reflected record crushing in October. And we would probably maybe raise this a little bit more, but again, For Canada in particular, we're kind of constrained by stocks. You can see we're expecting a relatively big drop in the carryout in Canada from 2.7 million tons down to 1.6. Again, that's a little bit more aggressive than USDA, in part because our forecast for exports, which have also gotten off to a really strong start in the 2021 marketing year, and our forecast for crush are both above where USDA is projecting. If they make a change to these balance sheets, I think it's probably an increase in crush and potentially an increase in exports. The increase in crush, I would be a little bit more sure about. The increase in exports, I think USDA will probably wait until it's absolutely necessary to make that change. And with the strength of crush and the weekly volumes that are being reported, I think that's an easy change for them to make. But then I think they'll run into sort of the same question that we have, which is where exactly are the canola seeds going to come from to export without drawing stocks down more than probably they would feel comfortable with. And so I think it's probably they leave their export number unchanged and potentially raise their crush forecast up to 10 million tons. They tend to be a little bit more conservative and want to take kind of a stepwise approach to changing their forecast so that they don't end up raising a forecast and then lowering it. Of course, they do that sometimes. We all do that sometimes, but they try to, if anything, I think they tend to try and be more conservative so that they don't have to do that as often as other people. Canada's canola oil balance sheet, again, is kind of the same story as everything else. USDA and USDA expects a big drawdown in canola oil stocks carry out. We're basically steady. The difference that between our numbers and USDA's numbers is we reconcile to a different series than USDA does. And so we think that ending stocks are probably about as low as they can go already, and so further declines are unlikely. Again, you can see here the strength in domestic usage. We're about 125 or so thousand tons above where USDA is. We offset that a little bit with exports. We're just a little bit below where USDA is, but export demand we expect to remain relatively strong over the balance of the marketing year as well. Just kind of quickly on palm oil, we're also going to get the Malaysian Palm Oil Board's monthly supply and demand estimates for November here on Thursday. In general, the expectations are for a slight decrease in ending stocks. We're expecting maybe a slight build, but the differences in the numbers are relatively minor. I think the median analyst estimate is about a 2% decline, and I think we're just a little bit above unchanged for a build. The real story in palm oil right now is, one, we're entering the seasonal decline in production. And then two, that's sort of exacerbated by the fact that because of the pandemic, there are labor shortages. And while we've heard the labor shortage story a lot, and especially over the past 6 months, it does seem to be having a real impact on palm oil production now. Palm oil production peaked probably a little bit lower than it typically would have. Production in October was actually the lowest it has been since like 2016-17. And that's usually around the peak of production. And so if you look at sort of the month over month change in production, this year is relatively small compared to what you historically see in the first month of the seasonal decline, but that's only because the October number was October output was relatively small, And so, and I think that's the, that's a function in part of the labor shortages. And so production in November may ultimately be lower than we're expecting. And if that's the case, that's probably the difference in our expectations of a slight build in ending stocks and other analysts' expectations for slight drawdown in ending stocks at the end of November. The story with exports this month really was about restocking ahead of Indian holiday. Now that that's passed, demand has slowed a little bit, but I don't know that that is going to remain the case for very long, at least from the perspective of demand, given where we are with ending stocks right now and where the spread to soybean oil is. India lowered their import tax on crude palm oil in the past month. And so it looks like, despite the fact that they just did restocking ahead of a holiday, they're probably going to be back for more palm oil. Now, India also bought a shipment of soybean oil from the US, which was relatively unusual just because of its size. India typically takes a small amount of soybean oil each month from the US, but this was 30,000 tons of soybean oil. Their typical monthly average shipment is like 17 tons or something ridiculously small. And so this was obviously substitution of soybean oil for palm oil because of, in part because of the spread, also in part because of the relative level of Malaysian and Indonesian stocks. And so exports, I think the demand is out there, but they'll be limited by the available supply. And because of that, and because of the outlook for ending stocks until we get to the bottom of the seasonal trend in production, which typically occurs in February or March, palm oil prices probably remain relatively well supported here. I think they could go down, you know, maybe a couple of hundred ringgit, but I don't know that it's going to, that they're going to be able to go down a whole lot more than that. And we expect that that spread between soybean oil and palm oil probably drops down to record low levels. I think we're forecasting something like two and a half cent premium for palm oil by the time we get into the first quarter in February or March of 2021. All right. With that, George, I will open it up for questions.
Okay. Thanks, Tori. The first question I have is, how much potential is there for soybean farming expansion to help fill the elevated demand from announced renewable diesel plants? And do you have a similar point of view on canola expansion?
So it's there is a lot of potential. But to understand the real potential, you kind of have to understand how farmers make decisions. So in Econ 101, you're taught it's everybody is economically rational. And so whatever is going to make farmers the most money is the thing that they're going to do. Now, in real life, that's not necessarily the case. I would say that probably half of farmers' planting decisions are driven more by rotation concerns than the relative price of corn primarily, or wheat to a lesser degree, and soybeans. And it doesn't mean that that's not important, and certainly we expect that soybean acreage will increase in the coming years, in particular this next year, because soybean ending stocks are going to fall basically to pipeline levels here at the end of 2021. So we've got acreage going up above 90 million acres this next year. And that should be enough to keep soybean stocks from falling further and provide enough soybeans to meet the demand from both crush and from exports. Now we are just finished the latest update to our outlook report, which is a longer term outlook for all of the feedstocks. And I've got to say, one of the things that surprised me is that as I did those acreage projections going forward, you didn't really need a lot more acreage to meet, to keep soybean stocks from falling. And in fact, over the next, I would say, 5-6 years, soybean stocks actually start to build and acres kind of stabilize around 90 million, maybe a little bit below 90 million, somewhere between 90 and sort of 88 million. And that's primarily due to improvements in soybean yields. In conversations we've had with people in the seed industry, they are saying that basically over the next 5 years, rising yields are going to make it tough for soybean prices to maintain their current levels and probably will weigh on soybean prices really, really heavily over the next 2 or 3 years, kind of once we get past this time where we're at or close to pipeline levels. And so that kind of offsets the need for additional acreage. Now, with corn and soybeans, I think you're going to have, basically, if you just look at all of that acreage, you're going to have a relatively steady mix over the next year and maybe the next couple of years. Where soybeans can probably take some acreage is with wheat. If you look at the wheat carryout, it's always really, really high relative to where corn and soybeans are as a percentage of total use. And so that could tighten up a little bit and we could get some acreage shifted to soybeans in places like Kansas, primarily because the world has started to produce so much wheat and countries like Russia and the Ukraine have stepped up their export programs. And so we probably don't need to grow as much wheat, particularly hard red winter wheat, as we are. And so to the extent that we expect increases in acreage, and again, I think those increases are probably going to be relatively big this year, but then relatively modest going forward. I think that those acres are probably going to come at the expense of wheat. Now, for canola, in Canada, the wheat's it's canola or wheat, basically. And the wheat situation for Canada is kind of the same as it is for the U.S., where Canada probably can give up acreage, wheat acreage, and let Russia and Black Sea countries export more wheat in order to grow more canola oil that will ultimately, we think, contribute to the feedstock mix for renewable diesel producers. Now, right now, as I'm sure many of you know, canola oil doesn't have a path for renewable diesel production, but we expect that path to be approved by late 2021, early 2022, sort of at the latest. And if you look at, again, if you look at the Outlook report, it becomes really difficult to meet the demand, the total feedstock demand going forward without canola. So I would expect probably more of an acreage shift towards canola in Canada than the acreage shift that you'll see in the United States over the longer term. In the short term, probably soybeans probably take a bit, soybean acreage probably increases more in the U.S. than canola oil, canola increases in Canada. But over the longer term, I think Canada probably has plenty of acres that can be switched over from wheat to canola.
Okay, Tori, we have about, thanks for that thorough answer. We have about 2 more minutes left. We got a question here. What is the downside risk for soybean oil if South American growing conditions continue to improve?
So again, and I say, I feel like I say this all the time, the spread between, and I say that just to say that I'm being repetitive, the spread between soybean oil and palm oil is probably going to limit that. That said, soybean oil will tend to drag palm oil down a little bit, especially if soybean oil starts to capture more of the world's vegetable oil export market. And I think that the potential downside if soybeans break through sort of the 1150 barrier, which seems to be relatively strong support right now, they could probably head back down to 1050. At 1050, I think soybean oil could probably hit 35 cents, maybe 34 cents, somewhere in there before the fundamentals of palm oil and that spread to palm oil really limit the downside risk from that point on. So we probably have a couple more cents of downside risk right now. On the flip side, I guess you could see if something happens and Brazilian weather starts to dry out and people start to expect big cuts in Brazilian production, and soybeans go back up to 12, I think a test of 40 cents and then probably prices rising above 40 cents is pretty realistic, and you probably get upside price risk up to 42, 43 cents before you're kind of limited, as long as soybeans are in that sort of $12 area, 12 to 12.50 area.
All right, Tory. Well, that's all the time we have for questions. So thank you again for going through and answering them so thoroughly. To the attendees, if any of you are interested in the outlook, you can find it on the bottom of our website. Go to Renewable Fuels Watch and you find the outlook there. That's the report Tory mentioned, and we're going to be sending out an update on that this week. So look for that from us. And Tory, thank you. Attendees, thanks for your question, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, George. Thanks, everybody.